This is Rob Peary with the Coffee Runs Deep podcast, where we interview coffee farmers, coffee roasters, and we share their stories. I truly hope you enjoy the experience. Welcome to the Coffee Runs Deep podcast. I'm your host, Rob Peary, and we have a cool dude on today, Mr. Alex, how do you say your last name? Ketron?
Ketron.
Mr. Alex Ketron with Ollie's Coffee, which is based in Oxford, Ohio. So, Alex, tell me how you got into everything.
Yeah, no, pleasure. Thanks, Rob, for having me on here. Nice to meet everyone. As Rob mentioned, I am the owner and head roaster here at Ollie's Coffee, based out of Oxford, Ohio, which is, for those of you who don't quite know where Oxford is, it's about 45 minutes north of Cincinnati. I usually just tell everyone I'm from Cincinnati. where do I start? So I'll take it before we started Ollie's Coffee and kind of, you know, where we're at today. Obviously, you know, I've been around coffee. I started drinking coffee when I was probably like 6 years old. I would sneak a couple sips here or there when my mom wasn't looking over at my grandma's. And, you know, at first I just went for the straight black coffee, you know, no sugar, no milk, cream, whatever. But then as I started drinking more and more of it, I just loaded it up with sugar and cream. So it turned more into a sugar-based drink. But regardless, I had a love for coffee way back when. And, you know, as I got older through, you know, high school and college, I developed a love for it even more. You know, those late nights turned into coffee nights, you know, studying for exams. And I felt myself always in search for that perfect cup of coffee or that perfect bag of beans. I was a manager at Starbucks for quite some time down in Nashville, Tennessee. I should say shift supervisor. I wasn't the full manager, but, you know, I had a lot of responsibility there of, making sure, you know, coffee was brewed correctly, and they have all their ratios down anyway. So, but regardless, as I started falling more and more in love with it, I started to develop kind of a different palate that I was looking for when it came to coffee. You know, I was used to drinking just the dark roast, right? Where it had, you know, more of the smoky kind of burnt taste to it. And that was good to me until I feel like all of these more local coffee shops started popping up all over the place just, you know, in the past 5 to 10 years. And as specialty coffee started growing and growing, I just went on a hiatus and tasting every shop that I could find. And I think what it came down to is that's really what got me into exploring my coffee venture even more. A couple years later, I decided I wanted to start roasting my own beans. I wanted to see, you know, I had a friend who I grew up here in town with. And he, you know, did the same thing. He started roasting his own beans and I never tasted them, but I got into that and it quickly turned into something now a business. So a hobby turned into a business that's now even, you know, growing and growing. And, you know, we have been able to provide our community with specialty coffee where it wasn't as, you know, accessible before. So we've really seen the movement and the specialty coffee, and we wanted to bring that to our local community. So we created the company, Ollie's Coffee, and here we are today, 8 months later, and offering multiple different single origins as well as some blends, and we love it. We have had so much fun doing it.
That's cool, dude. How long did you work at Starbucks?
I was there for probably about 2 years.
Okay.
Started as a barista and worked.
That's a good, like, I feel, you know, if you go and you work somewhere like 2 years, you have a pretty good knowledge of like what's kind of going on there. You feel that's kind of helped you as far as like, you know, starting the coffee business and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, starting as a barista, you have the chance to, I think after a couple months, if I remember correctly, they have a coffee master program. And if you wanted to be a part of it, you kind of put your name into the mix and they chose a couple of people to begin that journey. And I began that journey. And just what we did is we took the whole journey from, you know, where the beans were sourced from, the different farms. We did coffee tasting. So typically they would grind up a couple coffees, throw it in a French press, and then kind of do like cupping exercises with the loud slurps and, you know, all that good stuff. So unfortunately, I kind of left Starbucks in the middle of that process, but that kickstarted how I looked at coffee differently, right? I looked at it more, you know, before of a, I need the caffeine. I like the taste. To, wow, this really ignites this part of my palate. Picking up on, you know, whether it's stone fruit or lemon or, you know, citrus, et cetera, right? Depending on where the coffee is sourced from. But it totally shifted the way that I think about coffee, leading into, you know, what we do today at Ollie's Coffee.
So how long after leaving Starbucks did you like buy a roaster and stuff? And what type of roaster did you get first?
So actually, I from the time I left Starbucks, I started a corporate job, and I actually didn't really do anything for coffee with coffee for probably 5 to 6 years. I was still always looking for that cup, though. You know, I was never not on the hunt for that special cup of coffee. But you know, just honestly, a year ago is when I got into roasting, and I'll walk you through kind of where, you know, the machine I started on, because you're probably going to be a little surprised and what I'm using today. So I actually started on a popcorn popper.
I think a lot of people do, man.
I
Like it's
bet.
kind of that
I
first
know. I
thing, you know?
know. Yeah, I think that's a really popular and a very affordable way to start,
Yeah.
right? And the reason why I like starting with that, and I didn't really know this until I scaled to my next roaster, which we'll get into a second. But the reason why I liked starting on a popcorn popper, now that I look at it, is because I really used my sight, smell, and sound, versus, you know, a lot of roasters now use Cropster,
Yeah,
Artisan.
data.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. I could have hooked that up with data. Obviously, I would have to, you know, kind of rig it a little bit, which I didn't do. But I was able to come up with a consistent pattern of roasting through just the smell, the sight. You know, what do the beans look like? I had a big light kind of right into the roaster so I could, you know, kind of like a trier, I could see what was going on. And, you know, that quickly scaled to about a month or two later, I jumped on the Arc 800.
Oh dang, you jumped up pretty steep then.
I did. And, you know, why that happened is I started roasting, and I was allowing my, you know, hey, family, do you want to try this? You know, I started roasting my own coffee, and I'm kind of a nitpicky kind of perfectionist when it comes to this kind of stuff. So I was really detailed around, you know, recording notes, you know, how far into the roast before I hear the first crack and then second crack, et cetera. So I shared it with my family, I shared it with friends. And it just quickly, I guess the word got around and people said, hey, I would like another bag of that Ethiopia. Hey, I would. And then soon enough, I was out there, you know, roasting 20 pounds a week on a little popcorn popper. And that I was putting way too many hours in
Yeah.
that. So I decided to take my craft to the next level. And this was even before I created Ollie's Coffee, right? And, you know, I had some ideas in my mind. I knew where I wanted to take this. But I scaled to the Arc 800, which is a fantastic roaster. Anyone listening who is looking for a great, you know, they say it can be used as a sample roaster, but it is just a fantastic roaster, very consistent. And it's from Crop to Cup, but Showroom Coffee is, they sell it as well. And they provide great, fantastic green beans. We had a really good experience with that roaster. And the consistency that was coming out of it, you know, batch after batch after batch, allowed us to get an even higher quality tasting cup out there. And that's when it kind of exploded. You know, we were at the farmer's market and the word really got around. We were giving out samples, you know, selling our coffee up there. And in the state of Ohio, you can do that. I know some laws in some other states, you can only kind of sell your bag and unless you get certain licenses, but we were allowed to sell the cup of hot coffee as well as cold brew. And, that kind of took us to the next level and scaling to what I use today, which is the Mill City, 3K. So another massive step. And I was a little hesitant about buying a roaster that big. I'm not going to lie. It's a big investment, man.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like even the art, like none of them are cheap. I mean, even sample roasters are expensive. So if you don't mind me asking, how much was the Mill City 3 kilogram? Like all
said and done. Yeah.
Did you get data with it?
Did I get data?
Yeah. Like the.
Yeah. So it comes with a USB hookup that just goes into your computer. It syncs with Artisan. And then it also, there's a beta testing for a program called RoastPath. I use a Mac when I roast, so I don't have that's more of a Windows based. They haven't come out with a Mac version to my knowledge yet. So Mill City, if you listen to this, correct me if I'm wrong. it did come with a hookup and all said and done, the full investment was probably around 18,000 to 19,000.
Okay.
The roaster itself being 15 and then the venting kit being, you know, $15,000 to $2,000. And then I had to pay for, you know, all the utilities behind it to get it vented and stuff like I went from a 3-inch venting kit for the Arc to a 8-inch venting kit. So, you know, that's a much big of a difference.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be sure it was all, you know, professionally installed and good to go there.
So where do you roast at then?
So we built a roasting room on our property. So what you see behind me actually used to be my old roasting room. And I had it on the desk and it was vented out of the window up there. So I did my own venting because it was very, very easy on the Arc 800. But when it came to the Mill City, I actually had my father-in-law and I built a roasting room on the property that houses the large roaster. And I have enough room in the roasting room to house all the different beans. So big sacks just on pallets everywhere right now. obviously stored in a control environment and away from sunlight. So, but the journey in itself with a roaster of where we started and where we've come is just has been crazy.
And that was within a year?
Yeah, that's within a year.
Dude, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, actually a little less than a year. I started roasting a year ago, but I actually, you know, from the time I got the different roasters, it's been about 6 to 7 months.
Oh, wow. So yeah. What was the biggest difference going from the Arc to the Mill City?
So, oh man, one, the batch size, 800 grams to 3 kilograms, excuse me, is being able to control the different variables, knowing what your fan speed should be at, your airflow control. And then going from, you know, just a couple of burners to twice as many burners, pretty much. It was an adjustment. It was a big adjustment. And, you know, I would say it was pretty easy to get things up and running, right? Like it was, it was a very good, controlled, consistent environment. You know, it's a double walled machine, just all steel built. You know, Mill City does a fantastic job in making sure that the consistency is there. Obviously it's a manual control system. So, you know, I still had to watch everything. I still had to listen for everything. I'm on the trier 24/7. So there was a lot of similarities when it came to like the protocols of roasting, right? You know, what to look for, what to smell for. But when it came to the controls, you know, again, the airflow is actually really strong on the Arc, very strong. And the Mill City has, you know, massive, you know, strength behind the airflow as well, but it's just different controls, and being able to, you know, take note and know what your low, medium, high airflow setting is, where your low, medium, high gas is, you know, when you're adjusting that, it was an adjustment.
So how long have you been roasting on the Mill City? When did you get it?
I got the Mill City, gosh, I've had it for, I think I got it in like June or July.
Okay.
I would say July. Yeah. So I got it in July. And so I've only been on it for about, you know, 4 to 5 months. And again, I jumped right in. Like I got the roaster. I got to tell you, that thing was packed up like I've never seen something packed up before. it took me a couple of days to get the thing fully unpacked off of the pallet. You know, we had to use a couple of jacks. So I don't have a bunch of heavy lifting equipment. So yeah. Took a couple of guys, but, and then we built the roasting room, moved it into the roasting room. And then, all said and done, it took about 2 weeks from time to unbox, to get all of the venting set up. By the time I fired it up for a seasoning roast.
Okay. So as far as like right now, are you pretty happy with it?
Oh, I love it. Really? I love it. And I'll be with it for a while. Right. I mean, yes, we're growing. You know, there's a lot of great opportunities, but at the same time, that thing is a workhorse. You know, I typically roast, you know, anywhere from on average 100-150 pounds a week. And it just spits it out like it's nothing. And it, you know, it's just a very consistent, well-built machine. And so, you know, I probably have, I probably have close to 1,000 pounds on it, already, and, have had no issues with that at all. I love it.
Yeah. That's cool. Do you still have your Arc set up or?
No, I'm actually, it's funny you asked that question because the other day I was thinking, I'm like, you know, I should have kept that roaster because I don't have a sample roaster. I sold it to put it towards this new roaster.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, in the beginning, like there's so much money, like you gotta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know if you still had it or not. So.
Yeah, no, I don't have it. I really wish that I kept it because, you know, there's a lot of different coffees that quite frankly, you know, I can, you know, a 3 kilogram roaster, I could throw in a kilogram and a half, you know, at 50% capacity and see how it turns. I mean, that's a small load for a big roaster. Yes, it can do it and it can do it very well. I've done it a couple of times, but I much rather prefer a small sample roaster. So there may be an opportunity where maybe I look at, you know, maybe even the small Arc sample roaster instead of having to go back to the 800 gram like I had. I'm looking at some different options there because it would be nice to have.
Yeah, like a sample roaster or something.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because I like to try to, you know, sample a new coffee, you know, every week or two. Right. So it would be much easier to throw in a small, really small sample that I can cup versus having to throw in a, you know, a kilogram or 1.5 kilogram, and yeah. a 3 kilogram machine. So it can be done. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the bad thing too. Cause a lot of, you know, farmers, I have some of them sending me some coffee and stuff, but it's like, it's 100 grams or 200 grams. And it's like, you know, to roast it well and to find something that you like, you know, it takes a few little roasts. And if all you got's a big roaster, it's hard to kind of, you know, make it work. But
absolutely. You know, and something that I've been doing is, you know, I'll order a batch of coffee that I want to sample. And, you know, maybe I throw in a 3-kilogram batch. Like I'd hate to use that many beans for something that I'm trying to sample, but I mean, I'll cup some of it and sample it, and then I'll just hold on to the rest and my wife and I'll drink it. You know, it's not the end of the world. So regardless of what the outcome is, it's more coffee for us, you know? Yeah. So
that, and that's what usually the extended family gets.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, it's also nice to have extra use for blends, right? So, you know, whether we look at 2-3 coffees for a blend, having that as, you know, being able to put that set aside and, combining it to, you know, working on different ratios for blends. I'm always messing with, you know, different coffees to find a blend. So, that helps with that as well, you know, so you don't have to really waste it.
Yeah. Well, kind of moving along into that then, how do you pick your coffee and where do you get your coffee from now mostly?
Yeah. So we work with, Direct Farmer, Benchmark Coffee Traders, which we partnered with, gosh, what was that? I want to say that was a couple months ago. I would say 3 to 4 months ago. I had reached out to them. I found them on Instagram, and I knew of a couple other local roasteries, that use them, and the local roastery's coffee was excellent. It immediately, you know, sparked the palate. And I said, I would love to source our beans, from, Benchmark. And, you know, we built the relationship. I reached directly out to, his name's Vikram, and, we just kind of hit it off right then and there. And, he was, you know, willing to, partner with us. And ever since, it's been a fantastic relationship. So we do a lot of our Papua New Guinea beans from them, since they have a lot of different farms over in Papua New Guinea. And then we also, you know, we have an Ethiopia washed. We have a couple of, you know, about 6 to 7 single origins that we source from another local coffee trader, Theta Ridge, up in South Bend, Indiana. And then all the rest, you know, we kind of use, you know, Coffee Bean Corral, some of the smaller imports. So we're still working on, you know, partnerships and whatnot, but I'm very satisfied with who we partnered with. They're always providing us with the highest quality beans, and it's been a great relationship. How we kind of choose which beans, you know, I struggled with this at first because, you know, I've had a lot of coffee in my life, and I've always been an Ethiopia Yirgacheffe fan. I think everyone has. Like,
yeah.
I have yet to meet someone who's like, yeah, I don't know about Ethiopia Yirgacheffe. it's always a fan favorite. And in fact, every cafe I go to, whether it's here in Ohio, whether it's, you know, Kentucky or down south, East Coast, they're always sold out on drip of Ethiopia. And it's like, oh man, did you guys just sell out? Like, is it my luck? Because I really was wanting one of those. So that was a coffee we definitely wanted to offer. And I've roasted natural Ethiopia Yirgacheffe, and I've roasted washed. Personally, my favorite is washed, just because I love the more kind of lemony floral notes that I get out of it. And it almost, you know, sometimes has a black tea finish. So it's a very light, nice, lightly roasted coffee that we offer. And it's probably one of our most popular. So we're really glad that we chose to go with that single origin. And then, you know, I love fruity coffee. So the African coffees to me, are a big hit, and our customers seem to like it as well. So, you know, of course I have a Kenyan, I have, We decided to do a Bali Blue Moon. We have, you know, a couple decaf offerings, a Bali decaf. And so we kind of just wanted to have a healthy mix of different single origins, but we also wanted to, you know, see kind of what was out there, you know, what was popular, what were the drinkers loving. So, that's why we have 6 to 7 single origins, because we found that they love variety. You know, I think everyone does, right?
Yeah, that's the thing too. What's the coffee scene up there? Do you all have much competition? Like, is there, you know, like, well, down here, there's not many. There's just a few like really good ones, you know, like probably count on one hand how many specialty coffee roasters we have that are good.
Yeah.
What about up there?
So we, there's a good mix of competition. Absolutely. I would say in more the Cincinnati, Ohio market, there's some nationally recognized roasters in Cincinnati. So I love going down there and kind of, you know, coffee shop hopping, instead of bar hopping, we coffee shop hop.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to name a few, I mean, gosh, Deeper Roots is always at a top coffee shop. I mean, they're everywhere. And I can see why. Their coffee's excellent. You know, I lived in Nashville for 5 years before moving back to Ohio. So I was around like Crema, Frothy Monkey, Steadfast Coffee, all of those, you know, those three coffee are, they're top roasters in Nashville, Tennessee, and Tennessee in general, and nationally known. So when it came to moving back to Cincinnati, Ohio, the first thing that I did, especially in the past, you know, year and a half, is research all of the coffee, the local roasters. So there is there's a very healthy mix, and very, very tough competition when it comes to, you know, coffee roasting. Specifically in Oxford, Ohio, we are actually the first coffee roaster.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So there is a couple of coffee shops, one kind of, you know, native to the city, been around here forever. It's one of my favorite places to go, to get an in-person espresso if I don't make it at home. You know, they do have our bagged coffee, and we have a great relationship there. But in terms of actually roasting, we are the first roaster to be in Oxford, Ohio.
That's cool. So what are your plans as far as, do you plan to have your own cafe one day, or do you want to stick strictly to roasting?
Oh man, that's been a question that's been on my mind for literally like 6 months, almost like when we got started and this started really scaling. Having been in a coffee shop, and being a part of Starbucks for 2 years, I got a really good taste of what it's like to, you know, obviously that's at a much different scale, you know, being the size that Starbucks is, but I did get a taste of what it would be like to, be in charge of a coffee shop. And I loved it. I loved the hands-on, never stop moving, providing customers, watching their face light up when they had that latte. And oh my gosh, you know, this is the first part of my day that I look forward to. I love that satisfaction when it comes to providing coffee to customers and just the community. So I would love to one day, have a roastery in a cafe. You know, I don't know if there's a lot of places you can go now where you actually see the roasting room, you know, off to the side or in the back, and, they're serving the coffee out front. And I think that would be an excellent, addition to Oxford, Ohio. And to be able to have customers have our drink, have our coffee, have our espresso, a latte, whatever, you know, every day of the week versus, you know, just at the farmer's market on Saturdays. So, you know, obviously with that comes, you know, the risk that we're all going through right now, the hard times with COVID, which I, you know, has impacted the restaurant industry. So there's a lot to think about there. Right now we're just focusing on being a roaster, right?
Yeah.
We, you know, through wholesale, through all the different relationships we have and offering it to our community, we're going to stick to that for now.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. It's kind of one of the things, like, it's hard to, it's hard to plan forward not knowing what's going to be, you know, kind of occurring with the whole COVID stuff. So, but I will say, like, having 2 years experience as a, you know, a barista, and then, you know, as the shift supervisor, that's kind of, because I'm going to be starting a coffee roastery and cotton, you know, cafe. And yeah. I will say, like, that's kind of the thing I'm the most nervous about is, like, because I haven't had that experience, like, being a barista or, you know, running a coffee shop. So, like, what's that scene like? You can sit in a coffee shop and see it from the outside, but what's it like when the line gets, you know, backed up and everybody's, you know, freaking out or whatever? Yeah. And most of them look pretty composed and just getting their job done, you know? So it's like, I don't know, having 2 years knowledge at a place like Starbucks, that has to be pretty good, you know, kind of confidence, help your confidence whenever you do start it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my fear right now, dude. It's just like, what if you start and you don't really know what to do, you know?
Absolutely. So. And you bring up a good point. You know, you mentioned when you know, they look composed, even though there's a long line. And I think, especially nowadays, the way that we look at coffee, it's become, you know, it's always been an art. Like it's always, you know, from crop to cup has always been an art. But I feel like nowadays, even more, coffee is turning into one of those things where people will wait, you know, a couple of minutes for a good cup of coffee, whether that's, you know, making a latte or getting a doppio espresso or, you know, just waiting on a hot cup of black coffee. I'm seeing with all the cafes that I've been, yeah, there's long lines, but people are willing to wait. And I think when you see that as someone working behind the counter, it's kind of like a peaceful, like, you know, the hard work that I'm putting into this cup and you're willing to wait. And that makes me happy because you know the product that you're getting. And that's why you keep coming back time after time to this place, because you appreciate the hard work we put into making this great cup of coffee. So yeah, I think having composure while it being very busy is definitely key to success of, you know, anything really.
Yeah.
Especially the coffee shop world.
Yeah. And I remember speaking to Nate, he's one of the guys out here. He owns Rev Coffee Roasters out in Lafayette. And he was saying too, how, you know, once they started their cafe, it kind of helped them boost their coffee roaster sales a lot, because it gave people a chance to come in and taste their, you know, the coffee they were roasting. And then he said after that, it just kind of compounded. So yeah, that's one thing too. It's like, what do you start with first? You know, like I always think about that too now, like, should you start a cafe first? Or should you spend a lot of, cause like buying a roaster and learning that's a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, what path do you go down first? Or do you just dive into a bunch of debt and do it all? You know, it's like, what do you do? You know?
I mean, that is a great question, because I feel like I feel like I've seen two sides of it. I've seen the individuals who jump right in and open up a coffee shop and either get into roasting themselves or source the roasting from, you know, a local roaster.
Yeah.
And then I've seen, you know, kind of what we've done, what our approach is you start roasting the coffee, you get familiar with the amount of craft and time that you put into that. And then it naturally kind of just turns into opening up a cafe so that you can offer your coffee.
Yeah.
But both are, I mean, when you think about it, both can be be very stressful, because you got to find the people to run it, right? You know, to help run it. You got to find the passionate people. You got to find the people who are willing to pour their heart and soul into it to make it that special place where people come and want to be a part of, you know, each and every morning, afternoon, evening, whatever that looks like. So, yeah, man, that's a great point, you know, and a great way to look at it is there's two sides of the coin, and you kind of just, you pick and choose. And a lot of it's trial and error too, you know?
Yeah.
I scaling up to this big Mill City roaster, there were a lot of, you know, what ifs involved, right? I knew I was a consistent roaster. I knew the quality producing off of each batch. But there comes, again, with COVID, a lot of questions around, well, you know, how do I know he's safe handling the beans and this and that, that could play into the picture. And so there's a lot of things that you got to think about, and it's a very costly adventure, but I've learned so much from it. And I feel like it's been a really good investment and like a good risk to take.
Oh yeah. I feel like it's such a good education on business, like the whole process, you know, because you're having to learn how to make a product, sell a product, and then like the website, the advertising, just all of it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's one of the best business educations you can literally give yourself. You know, it's
free education.
Start a roastery.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my wife and I have just learned so much over the past, you know, 6 to 7 months of as this scales, you know, the things to do and the things not to do. Like with every business plan, with everything you get yourself into, you learn that there's things that you should do, you should continue to do. And then there's things that you look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, you know, this may not be working this way. How can I change it? And we continually learn every single day, you know, whether that's me learning about a new coffee that I'm going to roast, or, you know, a question about roasting, or, you know, just a question about business. There's a lot that goes into it when you look at the company and then all the little branches that kind of interconnect to it. So, yeah, it's a learning process, but it's a fun learning, right? It's not the math class that you sit down and wait until the end, wait until the bell rings, right? You're constantly wanting to learn more.
Oh yeah. Time definitely flies. You're always kind of looking for more.
Right. Yep.
As far as your roaster, like whenever you do scale up again, would you go with Mill City again, or would you be looking for, you know, something different? Like if you went to a 12 kilo or something like that?
Yeah. Honestly, I think I would stick with Mill City. I'm, like I said, I'm very satisfied with them. I've had no issues at all with their machine. And it's very, very easy to use. Of course, there are many learning curves, right? You know, there's something that I feel like I learn every month about it. But it's been able to spit out some of the best coffee that we've produced as a roasting company. And their support is just incredible. I've hopped on probably 3 to 4 Zooms with them already. As a Mill City buyer, with that comes endless support pretty much. So, you know, from a support aspect and being US based, it's really good. I know there's other, you know, there's Dietrich's out there, you know, Probates, there's all kinds of different roasters out there. But I think I would stick with the Mill City. Pretty firm on that.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, I guess if you learn a 3 kilogram one and you jump up to a 12 kilogram or whatever they offer, I mean, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the same. It should be pretty much the same. So it seems like it'd be pretty easy to kind of, you know, move up into that. So their customer service and all that's pretty good.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're very friendly. You know, I've even talked to the CEO a couple of times.
Oh, really?
during my buying process. I got to talk to him, and, you know, kind of learn more about Mill City, you know, before I got this huge investment on my shoulders. I learned more about the company, learned more about the roaster, and I did some shopping around. I didn't just find Mill City and say, hey, bam. Yeah. You know, I'm going with them. I will say that I knew a lot about Mill City before I moved forward with them, just from their YouTubes, around, you know, the Mill City schools. They have a ton of videos and resources.
Yeah, they do good with their content.
Yeah, they do. They do. And it's really good. You know, as I was getting into roasting, I stumbled upon those after I got into roasting, and it kind of just even helped me more, solidify some of the things that I was doing. And then some of the things that I should be doing.
And it builds trust with them too. You know, like, I feel like you trust Mill City after they put out that much free content, you know?
100%. Yeah. And, you know, I looked at Buckeye Roasters as well. I did look at Dietrich's. I felt like the Mill City, though, again, was the best bang for the buck. You know, they offered such a fantastic product that I knew was well built because I did a ton of research on it, ton of review overreads, and it was just a no-brainer for me, and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. Well, switching things up real quick, what was your hardest roasting concept to kind of wrap your head around or get past?
Yeah, for sure. That's a good one, because there's definitely a lot that I could talk about there. You know, I think just understanding, you know, you mess around a lot with charge temps, you know, based on moisture and density of the bean. You know, if you charge too high, it could result in, you know, burnt beans. If you charge too low, you can, it can stall out the roast and you can lose momentum. And so there's a lot of, when you first get started, and even now, you know, when you're testing new beans, finding what that right charge temp can be, and then how to carry that along through the rest of the roast. You know, what airflow controls do you need? You know, from charge all the way to, depending on if you take it into second or past second crack, we do a lot of our roasts. We keep it light, medium. We don't really take it past that. Some of our blends are a little bit darker, you know, espresso roasts and stuff like that. But I would say the biggest learning curve and the roasting experience is really just finding a good roast profile and consistently doing it over and over and over and finding that sweet spot. There's a lot of kind of messing around with those numbers. But once you find it, it's very easy to repeat and fun to roast. If I could roast all day, every single day, I mean, we're talking dream like that, that would be amazing. So I have so much fun doing it. But yes, there's a lot of challenges and learning curves behind it, right? It's not an easy thing. Yeah. If you're trying to get the perfect cup. So
then as far as like marketing and stuff, your Instagram and all that's like pretty good. Where are you marketing mostly? Is it Instagram and social media? Or are you doing anything kind of like, you know, old school or anything like that?
So a lot of it's Instagram. I would say most of it, 90% of it's Instagram. We take our own pictures. We do everything with camera. We, you know, try to find the right placements for the bags. I mean, nowadays there's a lot that goes into social media, man. It's a different player from what it was even 5 years ago. So we try to be the best that we can. You know, obviously it's just my wife and I running this business. You know, obviously family, all of our family's in town to help. So it's a family run business. And we take care of all of the social media. So the pictures, the posts, what are behind the posts, the website. We do a lot of website activity. So there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, we try to get all that stuff out in the morning before things get too crazy, you know, during the day. So, Instagram has been, very, very good to us. We're very thankful for it, 'cause it's been able to scale our, business. I mean, it's how we got connected. Right. So,
Yeah, I was going to say the one thing about your Instagram, like I didn't see you in it too much. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, you speak really well. I would definitely try to do more video and stuff, because honestly, like Instagram, you already know it's kind of going video direction. They're kind of pushing video a lot more than just images now, like, which kind of sucks, because it's like, man, like I do video on YouTube. I don't want to do video on every platform, you know, but this is what it
and
is.
Video
but
takes time. Like, when you think about how much time it takes to make a reel, and we try to do reels as much as possible, but by the time you do, even coming up with the ideas, like what should my reel be about today? You know, I've probably only done enough reels I can count my fingers with, but each one it's like, you know, should I do a a reel with music on like how to, you know, making a pour over tea or French press, or, you know, you kind of, that's one thing that I'm going to try to improve on for 2022 is, you know, a goal of getting more into that, because yeah, nowadays it's where the videos are at. Pictures are old news. You know, it's all about the stories, the reels, the videos. So that's one of our goals.
Yeah. No, I think you could do pretty good with that. If y'all put out some videos and stuff like that, it's just weird, like how you have to market nowadays, you know?
Absolutely.
Do y'all use Facebook at all or not?
Yeah, really? We do. Yeah. So, you know, obviously you can link the two. Usually when I make a Facebook post or story, it automatically spits out the Facebook, but, even that, I mean, making sure that, you know, I'm almost seeing like there's a shift from Facebook to Instagram over the past couple of years, where I feel like there's more Instagram users versus Facebook users.
Yeah,
from the business side. You know, I feel like businesses are leveraging Instagram more than Facebook. And that's just what I've seen. So we do put a lot more energy, I feel like, into posting on Instagram and, you know, driving traffic through there than we do Facebook, but we do leverage both.
Yeah. So how do y'all sell in town, mostly at the farmers markets and stuff like that?
Yeah, we sell at the farmers markets every Saturday. So, and our farmers market goes through the wintertime, believe it or not. So I'm out there with my wife on Saturday mornings. You know, our daughter's either with us or she's with our family members, and we're out there slinging coffee in, you know, 30 to 40 degree weather. We're committed. We're committed.
Heck yeah,
we
dude.
We do have people who will come out for our coffee, who will come out and buy bags. And, you know, every Saturday is a little bit different, but we've been fortunate enough to, since selling at the farmers market, you know, make a good community impact when it comes to our coffee. So something that, you know, we actually didn't cover that what Ollie's Coffee does is, I feel like would be a good thing to point out is we take a portion of our proceeds every single month and we donate to Compassion International. We find countries where we source our beans from and we sponsor children. So I feel like that has been a really good way for the community to get involved in. And it's been really impactful for us. And we have really grown a relationship with the kids that we're writing to back and forth, you know, sharing stories, Christmas stories, or, you know, helping them out when, you know, they're not as fortunate as we are. And it's just, it's a breath of fresh air knowing that you're doing something good versus just providing coffee. You're making an impact in others' lives. So I feel like that is definitely, from a community aspect, you know, brought everyone a little closer together and helping fuel our mission at Ollie's Coffee. So it's been great, you know, selling coffee here in the community.
That's super cool, dude. And it's good. Like, I don't know, whenever you tie it into like a good cause, it just makes it like so much more worth it. You know, like the time you put into it, just all of it.
Yeah. I mean, from day one, you know, we wanted it. It was more than just coffee from day one. It was bringing the community together, you know, bringing people together, bringing their stories together. You know, there was something about walking into a coffee shop and seeing people sit down at a table, some of which didn't even know each other. They had just met in the coffee shop and sharing life experiences. And Ollie's was created from a very unfortunate experience that my wife and I went through, hence the name of the company, that we've turned into something more about what it stands for. And so helping everyone understand that and telling our story has been impactful. So
you mind me asking what Ollie's, the name, comes from?
Yeah. It was the name of our son. So, you know, it's been a tough year for us. Fortunately, he's not here with us today, but, we have been able to do a lot of things in honor of him and, continue to, you know, I again, from day one, I wanted to create a legacy. I wanted to create a name for something to remember, you know, each and every time I'm doing this coffee or roasting this batch or bagging this coffee, I have him with me 24/7, you know? So, it's definitely been an experience for us, a hard experience, but, you know, turning that into something where we can, again, impact other children, and help them out as I think has, it's helped me heal a little bit. So.
Yeah, dude, I could only imagine.
Yeah.
Geez, my third kid's a son, he's 11 months now. And yeah, I couldn't imagine losing any of them, dude.
Yeah.
That is like the biggest thing you pray for every night is like for take anything else, take me. But Jesus, yeah. Louise.
Yeah, it's been hard, but you know, it's something I enjoy doing for him. So,
yeah. Well, dude, I do want to know. So like at the farmer's market, do y'all like brew coffee and stuff for the people too? Or do y'all just sell roasted coffee?
Yeah, no, we brew the coffee fresh. So I grind it up there. We have a commercial system. You know, we have quite the setup, and we started with a huge setup. My brother-in-law, who helps me roast, sometimes, created a wood kind of wall that stood up where we can put shelves and add our coffee to it and put decorations on. And, I mean, those suckers are heavy. Putting that in the car every Saturday morning or Friday night, you know, that's like 50 pound a wall. They come apart, you can stack them. So it was a really good way to kick off, you know, hey, Ollie's here at the market. I don't use those walls now cause it's cold and there's not too many people out that come compared to the summer months. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're there every Saturday, just the farmer's market slinging coffee, freshly brewed. And we did seasonal ice, cold brew, and, we're not doing that during the winter months, but it was a hit. We actually sold cold brew growlers, and, you know, we live in a college town with Miami University. Cool. So, you know, that there were students drinking the coffee, taking those growlers, using it for something else, washing them out, bringing them back, get a refill. So it was a multi-purpose system. Yeah, we have so much fun up there doing it. The family comes up, and we know a couple people up there as well. And so we just connect with everyone, and 3 hours flies by, you know, and we sell a bunch of coffee, and it's a win-win.
Heck yeah, dude. Well, shoot, dude, that's about all of my questions. Do you have anything you want to add or anything you want to kind of say?
Gosh, I mean, we could probably take a whole other hour to talk about your 2022 plans for, you know, roasting and starting up a cafe or whatever, but I would love to, what are your thoughts on like, you know, which roaster you want to start with? Cause I'm sure you've talked about the Arc. You're talking with me about the Mill City, and I've heard, you know, heard previous podcasts about it. So I'd love to hear kind of what your thoughts are, how you want to get started.
Yeah. Right now I'm looking at US Roaster, Diedrich, San Franciscan, okay, or Loring. I want to kind of keep it in the States if I can, just because of supply chain issues and stuff like that. Cause like you're saying, I don't know what's going to be going on a year or two from now. So yeah. I'd like to have something that's kind of like, you know, in the States that I could potentially get parts for and stuff like that, or, you know, help for if I needed. But I don't know. I have tasted a lot of coffee from the Loring, but they're just so expensive. And it's like, I don't know. Do you roll the dice and go that route? And mm-hmm. I want to look more into like, as far as how much gas and stuff do you save? How much money would you save over the course of a year, and over 4, 5, 6 years, does it pay the difference in getting a US roaster or something, you know, a little bit cheaper? And that's the thing too. Like if you're paying, you know, potentially $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more for about the same size roaster, what actually are you getting? You know, is the taste really that big of a difference?
Right.
And that's my whole thing I'm trying to figure out now. So I've had a few of the roasting companies kind of invite me over. Loring's gonna, they said they would kind of do like a little thing for me and stuff. So I'm thinking I'm gonna see if I could video that and just kind of put that out too. Cause, and I'd like to see if I could get them on the podcast as well, like each one, and then speak to them for maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes on what makes them good. Why should I choose them or something like that? You know, so I don't know yet. I'm kind of, I don't know. I'm still in the deciding phase, and it's like you're saying, dude, it's a huge amount of money. So it's like, you know, whatever you get, you better be happy you got it. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you make some great points there, and hence why it's good to research a roasting company that you're gonna move forward with. And you know, the San Franciscan is that's a beautiful machine.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of great machines out there. So, that would be awesome. You know, that's something that I wish that I would have kind of done is go to some of these places. You know, like I know ARC is, you know, Crop the Cup is in Brooklyn, New York. I would have loved to gone up there, roast with them a little bit, and kind of get that hands-on experience before I went with them. Not that I needed to do that, but yeah, you bring up a really good, a good approach there.
Yeah. I remember in the last, podcast with Jordan, like he brought up a really good point. Like you drive the car before you buy it. And it's like, like I want to roast on a Loring before I go and buy a Loring. I want to roast on a US roaster before I buy one. Like, if you're dropping that much money, I want to go somewhere and roast on it before I go and like buy it. So I guess that's going to be another thing for me too, is like, who's going to be, you know, the customer service, like you're saying, stuff like that, like who's responsive, who's, you know, pretty cool to work with and speak with and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just the whole thing is just, I don't know, it's like eating an elephant, you know, just every little thing you got to learn. I'm working through the business plan now, and that's just a whole different animal, you know, trying to get funding through a bank and seeing like everything I thought that would need to be in the business plan. She's like, you know, like this is kind of more what they're looking for. And I'm like, what? Like, okay. I mean, but she's done a bunch of them, you know, so I'm going to listen to that advice. So
yeah,
it's just all of it, dude. So I'm actually really, that's me and my wife been talking about, just how much we're going to learn in the next year going through this whole thing. Like a lot of lessons that we, you know, may regret, but I don't know. It's like, you might as well, you only live once, so go ahead and try the best you can and see what happens, you know? So,
are you going to jump all into it at once? Or are you going to kind of, you know, slowly work your way into doing it full time?
Yeah. I talked to the banker about that, and I'm probably going to keep my job because I mean, I make pretty decent where I work. So it's like, I'd be taking a pretty good pay cut if I just went and, you know, worked in my coffee shop. So I don't know. I think I may have to in the beginning to even get the loan, to, you know, that way, because I got to give them my W-2s and projections of the business and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it really just depends on how fast everything grows and takes off and stuff like that. But I don't know. I feel if I can hit the social media stuff pretty hard, YouTube and stuff like that, and I can get the demand going. It's my hometown, so I have like a pretty good, you know, I went to school with a lot of these people. I work around a lot of these people, you know, so it's not like I'm doing it somewhere out of state or anything like that. I don't know. I'm still scared, dude. Like, I ain't gonna lie. Absolutely. Like, there's always that, like that, like you're saying, like with COVID and all, like my state, I live down in Louisiana, so, you know, we're pretty lenient on restrictions and all that. Yeah. But you never know, like we could always be overridden by something, and you know, we're back to being locked down too. So I don't know. It's just, it's a weird time to be kind of planning anything, but I feel now's a time where a lot of people aren't planning. So this is kind of the time to be move and be on the attack, the way I'm kind of looking at it. So,
yeah, no, that's fantastic, Rob. And thanks for sharing that. You know, we, like you said, a lot of people aren't planning. So now's the time, you know, if you're not moving towards something, that's how I looked at it, is, you know, I wanted to do something outside of just the norm, right? You know, I've had my corporate job for, you know, 5 to 6 years. And it's like, you know, let's do something different and let's learn a lot about it. And, you know, that could turn into something else. And, you know, we've learned, you know, we've been fortunate enough to even be able to do this. And it's turned into something greater than, just coffee, like I said. And so, yeah, hats off to you, man.
That's kind of my thing too. Like, it's not at this point, it's not even about the coffee. I just want to create a space for like my community. You know what I mean? Like where anybody that's, you know, wants to come drink some coffee, like have some coffee and, you know, I want to experiment with coffee, like try new coffees and just try to get the quality as best as I can. You know, I want to put together a team that's like super passionate about it and I'm going to just kind of see what we can create, you know? So
absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
That's it. Well, just cool, man. See if it works, you know?
Yeah, no, man, it will work. I mean, gosh, you know so much about coffee already with all that you've been doing. So I'm excited to see what you do.
Yeah, we're gonna give it hell. That's all I can say. So
there you go, man. There you go.
As far as like Ollie's and everything, I'll link all your stuff in the, you know, the comments and the description. Okay. And on the podcast and YouTube and stuff like that. And you have any last words?
No, thank you for having me on. It's been fun. I feel like we could keep on talking and, you know, and talk the night away, but unfortunately that can't happen. So, but no, it's been fun. I love chatting about coffee and I just wish you the best of luck.
Heck yeah, dude. No, I appreciate it. No, you can always hit me up whenever. So
that was a great conversation. I could literally talk to Alex for a while. Truly appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And thanks everyone for tuning in to the Coffee Runs Deep podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Check out Ollie's website and follow on Instagram. I'll have it all linked below. Also, thanks to the patrons that make this possible. And as it is Christmas Eve, I hope you have a blessed Christmas and holiday. See you next time.